Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, here with another food diary featuring women and grains. Sophie Williams is my guest today, and I'm so excited to be here with you, Sophie.
Hello.
Welcome. So, Sophie, we are in upstate New York at Sparrow Bush Bakery. However, your bakery is in
Bellingham, Washington, in the far northwest corner of the country.
So tell me about how you landed there and how baking landed in your life.
Oh, it was not an entirely logical progression. I grew up in Seattle and went away to liberal arts college in the Midwest, and knew that I wanted to be back in the Pacific Northwest. And so After college, I was living out in the San Juan Islands doing what you do in the islands, which was piecing together all sorts of work. I was doing ecology field work and construction and farming. I studied geology in college and got very excited about soil science and geomorphology, and did a senior thesis on soil recovery from like intensive corn and soy. And so I was like very idealistic about agriculture and had lots of romantic ideas about agriculture. And so I decided that I was going to work on farms, and I worked on farms for a number of years and eventually decided I was not going to become a farmer, and still had like tons of remnant romanticism around food systems and local food, and I felt like bread was this gap in our local food system. Like no one was using local grains, and I wanted to be working with my hands and working with my head, and I liked baking, and I decided that baking would be easier than farming, and so I was going to be a baker. So that is how I ended up.
Wow.
Opening a bakery.
And when did you open your bakery?
I started Raven Breads in 2014. So 5 years. Been doing this for 5 years.
5 years. And tell us about the breads that you focus on and where you're baking and your delivery system.
So when I started, I was actually like every other West Coast baker. I had the tartine book, and I was using lots of central milling flour with a dash of our hammer milled whole grain flour from the local mill, and was making like perfectly acceptable whitish sourdough breads. And then I went and spent 3 weeks with Don Woodward in Toronto, who is like a passionate, if somewhat stoic, advocate for local grains. And I was so inspired by her baking, and I came home and I decided that I was not going to use white flour anymore. I was only going to use the flour from the local mill. And so I don't even know what I did with the remainder of my central milling flour. Maybe I gave it away or something. And I just like went cold turkey on white flour and switched to all whole grain baking, which was fairly disastrous. And I made a lot of really ugly bread, and I sold it because I had to sell it because I didn't have another job. And yeah, so that's how I got started with. I do all whole grain sourdough bread and then whole grain pastries. And the mill is about 25 miles away and buys grain from a mix of Western and Eastern Washington farmers, and then a few grains come in from Montana Milling out in Montana.
And what's the name of your mill?
It's Fairhaven Organic Flour Mill.
I've been there. I can
It was an old hippie institution in Bellingham, which is now like a regular for-profit business in an industrial park. Mm-hmm. Down in the agricultural valley south of us. It's great.
And the flour is still hammer milled?
The flour is hammer milled, which is not ideal for baking.
Bread, especially.
For baking bread. Yeah, it's pretty sandy. it's tricky. But yeah.
Wow. So that's a whole nother story of how you're managing that trickiness to get the breads that people want to buy.
Yeah. So that was part of, that was one of many impetuses for shifting me towards rye, because it was with the flour that I have access to, and with the oven that I have. I'm working out of a restaurant kitchen, and I hand mix and I bake in their convection oven. And the convection is on when the oven is on. So hearth breads are challenging, and I try to minimize the number of hearth breads that I bake. And rye lends itself so well to tins. So I started baking lots of rye bread, and then I got really excited about rye bread.
And you made a little zine, didn't you?
And I just wrote a little zine, and hopefully I will write more when people tell me more things about rye that I can put in a zine, because I don't know that much at this point.
But what inspired you to put some of it down?
Oh, so I as with many American rye bakers, I think, have really struggled shifting from baking wheat breads to baking rye breads, because they're totally different. And I just kept collapsing my rye breads. I mean, sometimes it would work and then sometimes it wouldn't, and I didn't know why. And I would talk to other bakers. I would talk to like really great bakers who had been baking for 10 or 20 or 40 years about my rye and about how to make it more consistent. And they would say, well, I do it this way because it's the way that I do it and it works. Or they would say, my rye bread collapses sometimes too, and I don't know why. So then I change something and it works. And I keep doing that new thing. And that was, I guess, kind of reassuring that I wasn't the only person collapsing rye bread, but also like for my scientific mind, like incredibly frustrating, because it's not like the most complicated science. I mean, sourdough is complicated, but it's not like
unsolvable.
It's not unsolvable. And so it felt so ridiculous that no one knew the whys of their rye fermentation. And eventually between trial and error and experience and a bread science class at SFBI with Tomas Tefri Chambiland, and books and blog posts and conversations with bakers and scientists, I started to get like more of a sense of the why of my rye bread, and I pulled that together into a rye troubleshooting class at the grain gathering last year. And people seemed to find it helpful. Some of them found it like totally overwhelming and told me that they would never bake rye bread. but other people, like the people who are already baking rye bread, seemed to find it helpful. So I figured I would put it into a format that people could look at if they don't already have that information.
And how can people get the rye zine?
Oh, so, I mean, I just wrote it the week before I started this trip and printed a few copies and photocopied some more. But when I get home at the beginning of April to start the market season, I will make a bunch more, and I'm going to put up the PDF for free on my website. And then I'll have the printed copies for, I don't know, some nominal fee plus shipping for people who want to order the paper ones.
And what is the name of your website so people can find you?
My website is ravenbreads.com.
Ravenbreads.com.
Yes.
That's great.
And I'll have a new tab for that.
Cool. So tell us about the tour that you're on, both this one, and my listenership isn't always familiar with the American self-guided bakery tour. So can you talk a little bit about this habit that American bakers have?
Yeah, so I think, I don't know, I imagine this arises partly out of how much we work and the isolation in which many of us very small bakers work, because we work so much. And there just, like, aren't that many artisan bakers in most of the country unless you live in Vermont or San Francisco. So going and visiting other bakeries is part, like, social relief. Like, oh, there are other people this crazy doing this ridiculous thing that I do. Thank God. I'm not alone. And it's part educational, seeing how other people have set up their businesses and the kinds of breads that they're baking, and inspirational in those ways as well. And yeah, it's just like a way to kind of step away from the day-to-day grind of owning a small food business and reconnect with the broader community.
And so this year you're taking 3 weeks off.
Yeah, this year I closed the bakery for 3 weeks, so my restaurant stocked up their freezers, I hope. I mean, they ordered a lot of bread. And the market isn't going right now, and my last bread subscription ended a week and a half ago. My next one doesn't start for another week and a half. And I flew into New York and rented a car and am driving around the Northeast for a few weeks, and then I'll fly up to Toronto and spend a week there with Dawn, who was the first baker I visited.
That's amazing. So, and you've done this before, other winters, you've taken time off. Talk about those journeys too.
Yeah, so I try to do this every year. It doesn't always happen. But I think one of the first winters I drove down the coast. So I'm on the coast in the far north, and I drove down to Central California and visited bakers along the way in Portland and down. It was mostly Portland and around the Bay Area, and then I came up through interior California on the way back. And one winter, maybe 3 or 4 winters ago, I shipped my bike out to what town was that? Somewhere in South Carolina, right by the border. The cheapest flight I could find. I shipped my bike to a UPS store and flew out there and walked over to the UPS store from the airport, put my bike back together, and went on a 3-week bakery bicycle tour, which was fantastic, through North Carolina. Unfortunately, there aren't that many places to bike tour in the winter that have like a density of bakeries. It's mostly a northern phenomenon. So I've only fit in that one bike tour so far. But yeah, and then this winter I'm in the Northeast.
That's great. What, I mean, you're in the midst of your journey, so I know insights sometimes come after your trip, but what are your insights so far that you want to share with us?
I think one of my favorite things, I mean, I don't know if this is one of my favorite things. One of the things that I really like about visiting bakers in person is being reminded of how generous they are with their knowledge. So I find that bakers will tell me, I mean, not only like the technicalities of their baking and talk about troubleshooting and the day-to-day work that they do, but are often quite willing to share numbers and like business structure and things like that. And like, I don't know, working alone and around other types of businesses, I can kind of forget how generous the baking community is. And so being reminded of that is really, really lovely. And I appreciate it every time.
That's awesome. Do you see, do you do any kind of long-term planning or dreaming about your baking life?
I do a lot. The kitchen that I'm in for at least 40 hours a week, every week, April through December, is loud. And it's very fluorescent, and it has no windows, and it smells like the restaurants that are cooking in there, which is sometimes lovely and sometimes not. And people play terrible music, And it's just like, it's a very overwhelming space to be in. And so I spend a lot of time daydreaming about my someday bakery, which I'm hopefully moving towards sooner than later.
What does it look like?
Yeah. Ooh. So this is like the total dream bakery, and I probably won't end up with anything like this, but I imagine having a neighborhood bakery, because I think that that's something that our city really needs. We don't have a lot of neighborhood hubs beyond the breweries, which we have many, many of. And so I imagine a neighborhood bakery with big windows and lots of light and big planters of herbs outside so that you can open the windows in the summer and have the smell of the rosemary and thyme and lavender coming in, and an open floor plan to take full advantage of all those windows, and big kind of farmhouse, like shared tables in the front so people have to talk to each other and they can't just sit there plugged into their laptops. and a bread and pastry program and coffee, and maybe at some point I'll find someone who wants to head food, which is not something that I've never worked in a restaurant. I have no plans to take on food service, but yeah, I imagine a well-lit, bright, cheerful neighborhood bakery. Lots of salvaged materials. I would love, I traveled last winter. This was like not really bread related. Last winter I went to Morocco with my mom, and I just like, I loved all of the tile and brickwork. Mm. I got so excited. I took so many pictures of like all of the stone and brick and tile work. So I have like visions of laying like herringbone salvaged red brick across the floor, and lots of details that may or may not ever come to pass. I want ultramarine blue somewhere in the bakery, because I love that, like in Mediterranean countries, that like flash of blue, like all the blue doors and the blue of that equatorial sky. So
do you have a favorite sweet or bread that you make?
My most intense bread, which is not my best seller but not my worst seller either, is I think my favorite. I make a rye, 100% rye bread that's made with coarse rye meal and sprouted smoked rye berries. So it's like sour and it has a lot of umami and it has that like really toothy texture from the rye berries and the meal. And it's just like, it's a meal in a loaf of bread, which is kind of what I want my bread to be. I want bread that is food, and that bread feels like food.
Sophie, thank you for talking with me. I'm very appreciative that you took the time on your tour to say hello.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to talk to you.